There's this statistic that I loved reading about, and it was from Google. It was like an official statistic. They said about 51% of all searches are new, are like new, completely new things that Google has never actually seen the day before. So
Wow.
it's like new word, like new phrases, new like trends and stuff. So that means opportunity is always there. As long as we still have new video games coming out, new phones coming out, new events, sports, whatever it is that's still coming out, there's always going to be a market about it. There's like crazy events going on in the world. People are going to be looking for it. So anything that's new on Google doesn't have any competition, which means that you can still rank from within weeks of indexing your website. That means that the possibilities always. You just have to be a little bit more creative in finding those opportunities.
Welcome to the Viral by Design podcast with Dave Rotherow, where we get inside the minds of today's leading viral marketers as they reveal the exact strategies they use to build brands, products, and campaigns that are magnetic to customers, spread like wildfire, and seize the attention of millions. This is Viral by Design.
So welcome to another episode of Viral by Design. Very excited today to be joined by Hassan Anbar. So Hassan is a serial entrepreneur and founder of Bright Lights Media, who are an e-commerce marketing agency. He started out in digital marketing back in 2005 when he discovered the power of AdSense and SEO. He's built hundreds of websites since the early days of SEO and then moved into learning email marketing techniques, which allowed him to skyrocket his affiliate marketing earnings. Hassan is a specialist in SEO and email marketing, a growth hacker for a number of big e-commerce brands. So Hassan, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So I'd really love to hear a bit more about how you got started, because you got quite a unique backstory, right? How you actually got started out online.
Yeah, well, you know, like being based in a country with a lot of little bit of resources back then, you know, back in 2005, you know, being a student and all, you know, people were being curious about like things to do online and stuff. I first stumbled upon what affiliate marketing is, and I learned what it was back when I was 18, back in 2002, and not knowing what to do, I was just kept like reading blogs and stuff. But as soon as I saw an opportunity to join AdSense, I did. When I was able to do that, then I started like looking for ways to monetize the website and like make more money, get those bigger checks. And you know, in those days, it was always about forums. That's where like exchange of information, people either like share their experiences or just ask questions. So you could actually gain a lot of insights into like whatever industries you want to master just by being active on forums, either by asking questions or, you know, like answering questions here and there. So, you know, spent a lot of time in forums, learned a lot about how to monetize sites, and got my check. First big check, because I was holding money for like a few months. So I got a check. For a student back then, you know, a 20-year-old, almost $2,000, that's a lot of money. I mean, especially in a place like Morocco. So it's like, okay, yeah, that's pretty good. Then I went to school in the U.S. The school in the U.S. experience was amazing. I was able to, like, open a PayPal account, do a lot more business on the side of, like, in school. And then my school time, like, my college days were over, so I had to come back home. And then kind of things just progressed from there. I didn't go straight into, you know, online business, starting businesses and stuff back then, because I got married a little bit earlier on in life than most people. So I went back to just getting a job, which was fun, you know, because I was doing something I enjoyed doing. But then things kind of started growing a little bit, bit by bit, and like my income from AdSense and from learning SEO and getting better at it, like day by day. So that's, you know, that's pretty much how kind of things started, just being curious and just spending as much time trying to learn how to benefit from the internet.
That's awesome, man. And I love that kind of message of curiosity. That's, you know, a great way to approach life in general, I think. So affiliate marketing back then and like affiliate marketing now, is that the same kind of thing that you're doing? Is it similar kind of products, or how has your attitude towards that changed over the years?
Well, affiliate marketing, like, it was very easy again. Things are a lot more complicated, a lot more complex now. For us, it was one marketing channel. You just pick a product, you base your website, and it can be as small as 10 articles on a website. You basically just write about a bunch of products, a certain type of products. Like one I started with, I think back in 2008, was a hair loss product. So I wrote literally about 5 articles, put them on a new site. WordPress was very easy. Again, now WordPress is a lot more complex if you want to work with it. I have to have a developer on the team to actually help me with anything. But back then it was like less than a week, 5 articles written by myself, set up the website by myself, very basic stuff. No, not even needed a logo or anything. And you do a little bit of article marketing is what we called it. So you build a few backlinks. And then literally a few days, you're indexed or you're on the first page of Google for a few keywords, and that's it. You're literally making bank, as the Americans say. You're making money right away. And it was, again, it was like very easy. But then again, people kind of stumbled upon that, abused it, and that's when Google kind of started cracking. But again, if you want to compare it to today, you have to have a certain budget. You have to have a specific kind of task list of what needs to be done. It's not going to take a week. It's going to take a few months to set up a website. There's a lot more competition. You need to think of other traffic methods, especially the methods that we're going to be bringing results. You know, you're not going to just work on SEO. You have to think of either Facebook ads, you know, native ads. So you have to have a budget again, and things are a lot different. But again, that doesn't mean that there's not much opportunity left. Actually, there's a lot more opportunity left because a lot more people are actually buying online. So there's an advantage to that.
Yeah, there's a balance, right? Yeah. So obviously SEO has changed a lot, you know, back from the days when you could stuff the bottom of your page in like white text on a white background and then suddenly rank number one back in the glory days. So is it still a viable thing for people to use SEO, like say small business owners and especially in saturated markets where say like info marketing, that kind of stuff, is SEO still worthwhile considering?
Well, in saturated markets, the thing is like for me, at least like now that I run an agency and all, what we do when we have people kind of come ask us about those services is we tell them we actually have to do an audit, run a test, see how competitive the market is, and depending on the budget, if we're going to be able to help them or not. And in most cases, a lot of people think that it's just going to be easy. You just slap a few things on the site and then they're going to start getting traffic. That's not always the case. So now what we're trying to do is help people kind of find those low-hanging fruits because they still exist. There's this statistic that I loved reading about, and it was from Google. It was like an official statistic. They said about 51% of all searches are new, are like new, completely new things that Google has never actually seen the day before. Wow. So it's like new phrases, new like trends and stuff. So that means opportunity is always there. As long as we still have new video games coming out, new phones coming out, new events, sports, whatever it is that's still coming out, there's always going to be a market about it. There's like crazy events going on in the world. People are going to be looking for it. So anything that's new on Google doesn't have any competition, which means that you can still rank from within weeks of indexing your website. That means the possibilities always. You just have to be a little bit more creative and finding those opportunities. And another way of doing things is that are still a little bit easier for us is finding these new markets. We're actually trying to capitalize on international markets, Arabic speaking markets. An Arabic speaking market or a German speaking market or a French speaking market is actually like 2008 in the US kind of Google market. It's a lot easier. It still exists, which is good. So if you go, and that's a good thing because a lot more people are going online. A lot more people are actually relying on technology, relying on Google, relying on Facebook. So if you, back in 2008, you'd think about France or Germany, they didn't have as many people using, you know, Google if you compare it to the US or Canada or whatever. But now that's not the case anymore. People are paying online a lot more in markets like Europe, Eastern Europe, the Middle East, Southeast Asia. So that means the opportunity is still there. You just have to be a little bit, you know, creative and finding which way to focus on.
That's interesting. So when you talk about being more creative, are we talking about like long tail keywords? Are we talking about looking for broader search terms, that kind of thing?
Yes. So obviously a long tail. But then again, when we're talking about international markets, let's say if we think about Sweden or we talk about Germany or France, for instance, you can still find relatively easy keywords to target, even in markets that you might think that are saturated, but they're not. You know, like if you look into it, I like to use a tool, an SEO tool called Ahrefs. has a lot of data points, and their data is very much up to date, and they have a lot of comprehensive information about a lot of languages and regions, so you can search specifically for types of keywords depending on the country. That's actually pretty good. It gives you those data points. So you might think that looking for trying to sell iPhones, for instance, in the German market, you might assume that it might actually be a little bit hard. But no, if you do the research, you'll find that the difficulty is very low, because there's a difficulty score on these tools. And you might actually just you don't want to base a whole business just on SEO, but again, it can be a viable traffic source, a viable marketing channel that you can invest in and still get results.
Got it. So it sounds like, you know, you haven't moved a lot more into email marketing now, and kind of, you know, being a big part of that world, or that being a big part of your business. What's your strategy now? Is it like, rather than just running people from a blog directly to an affiliate page, are you building that list and then sending them multiple different offers over time? Or is it like a targeted list? Is that the strategy?
What we do for email, either for like the clients that we work with or for our own sites that we run, is we try to automate much of it as possible. You know, we're working with a few e-commerce sites, and e-commerce sites, again, if done well, email marketing can bring in anywhere between 10% to up to 40%, in some cases even 50% of the revenue. So instead of just relying on Facebook ads or Google ads or any other type of paid traffic, you can actually get real consistent sales from an active email list. So what we do is we try to help them set the welcome journeys, the kind of abandoned cart journeys, all those good kind of juicy details of how to actually squeeze. You don't want to make it sound kind of evil, like squeeze every bit of, you know, profit of it. But again, you just kind of give people the option to reach out to their customers and provide them with promotional offers, with anything that they might be interested in. And, you know, most of the brands that we worked with or still working with, they're actually seeing good numbers from email. And just by, you know, adding a basic automations like a welcome journey for people who just buy, giving people discounts if they just buy, sending reminders for people who for some reason might have abandoned their carts. So there's a lot of opportunity out there for people have like an established kind of e-commerce business or even an affiliate business. So email is just a way to kind of like have a hold of your audience instead of just like relying on paying for ads every day. So it kind of makes me not mad or anything, but it frustrates me, the idea of seeing people spending tens of thousands of dollars every month on ads and then not actually kind of like trying to keep a small percentage of people on an email list so they can actually reach out to them. And especially if they're, you know, fans of whatever brand or whatever thing you're selling, whether it's digital or physical or anything like that.
100%, man. You know, it's such a recurring theme that people just don't realize how much money's left in their list. I was just speaking to Los Silva yesterday, and he was saying about how, you know, when he first got started out in marketing, he was sat in a hotel room with a bunch of marketers that he'd never really met, and they threw his offer into the mix in an email that we're going to send out. And within like 30 minutes, they made $20,000 from an email to their existing list. And he's like, wow, you know, I think so many people are like, as you say, looking for this traffic solution, just get more eyes, more front end sales. And they just forget about this massive people who are sat there ready to buy. So maybe one of the reasons for that is that people think that email marketing is dead, right? That's the mantra that so many people say, because you've got, you know, emails going to spam, or emails even just going to promotions in Gmail. You got deliverability dropping, you got open rates dropping, click-through rates dropping. What's your kind of strategies and what's your approach to combat that?
Okay, so other than all the technical stuff, you know, like fixing your DKM and your SPF records and all that stuff that we do, like once we start or warm up the email, if it's a brand new account. Other than all of that, there's that kind of human touch to it, and that's kind of trying to build a connection with your audience, with your followers, with the people, with your customers, and just getting people to open those emails, you know, like just increase engagement rates. That's what I like to call it. Just increase engagement rates, whether that be opens, clicks to the email. Cause the more you do that, the more signals you send to Google and Yahoo or whatever email provider their people are using. to actually keep your email address in the inbox, in the main, you know, main inbox. So that's, it's like, you know, the people who think, oh, we're creatives versus technical people. It's like, we're just going to go on a technical side of it and then it's going to solve it. I like to think of it from a creative point of view, after fixing all the technical stuff, obviously, because you don't want to send an email with too many images or too many like hyperlinks, and that might actually create an issue and might say, or using the wrong words, especially if you use free all the time, which is obvious. But the way I like to think of it is just talk like you're a normal human being, act like you're talking to each and every individual in that list of yours, in a way that, you know, instead of just like think of those people as just numbers and you want to squeeze every kind of sale out of them, just send, you know, straight to the point emails that will demand a specific action of them, like just a click, or, you know, just so you can get, again, increase engagement. So don't design your emails in the sense that all you want to get out of them is just sales. Think of it as just a marketing channel, because the point of it is just to bring people back to the website so they can take whatever action you want, whether, you know, it's a promotional offer, whether it's just a new blog post. So you kind of mix and match between like blog posts, informational content, and promotional offers. You just mix and match so that you can actually get people to keep clicking, clicking on those, opening those emails and click on those links, and be as genuine as possible, you know, because again, you don't want to think of that list as, oh, I have 100,000 people or I have 50,000 people. It doesn't matter, because honestly, myself, I've seen results from 2,000 people rather than like lists of 150,000 people. 2,000 people got me more money because I generally sent an offer that helped them, that was something that was directed at them, that they needed at that specific point in time, rather than like just sending random emails here and there. And if you can nurture that relationship, again, and talking about this is not really like rocket science or anything or any voodoo kind of thing. It's basic human communication. If you send emails, don't send too many emails, too many, you know, offers. Send information and content, send some value out there. And do not mess up that relationship. Because again, if you think of that list, I always like to imagine myself in a stadium. Because if I have the example of Instagram, if I have 20,000 people on Instagram as, you know, as followers, when I send out a story or like put a post out there, that's going to be a big number of them are going to see it. So think of the impact that you're going to have as if you're standing in a big stadium full of people all watching you. And when you put that yourself in that kind of perspective, your the way you think of it kind of changes a little bit. See what I mean?
Yeah, I got you, man. And you know, what you're saying is so great. I love that message that it all really comes down to the content. I think so many people get stuck in these kind of strategic ideas. And it's this balance, right? There's time for strategy, there's time for creativity. But you know, so many people get stuck in this idea of every person on your list should be worth $1 per month. It's like, so they build this list, and then they just email and don't realize, you know, why they're not getting that dollar out, or that, you know, it's just not working at all. I think it's the same with ads as well, right? So many people have a go with Google or YouTube or Facebook ads and they say, oh, well, it doesn't work, you know? But then, you know, I actually came across a really interesting statistic this week. I don't know if you heard this one. So Facebook themselves say that their most successful advertisers, the ones that really blow up online, like really like massively outperform everybody else by a large degree, they all have this one thing in common, that they on average split test 11 times more creatively than regular advertisers. So it's the creative, right? It's the message, it's the, you know, striking that kind of resonance with your customers, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's definitely this. It's also knowing your customer avatar. You know what they want, you know what they need, you know what they're looking for. It helps if you have an experience in whatever field you're, if you're a person selling cosmetics, you might want to have a perspective of, you know, people who actually use that service. As a man, I don't think I'm going to have any insight. I don't use any cosmetic products, but I'm going to pay up, you know, to have either focus groups or whatever. That's the traditional kind of way of going about it, or just having people who have like either ran businesses like this and consult with people who know exactly what they're doing. So at least you can know what points to hit, and instead of, you know, just blasting things into oblivion without any results.
Pray. Yeah. So one thing you talk about is Pinterest and how that can help SEO. So how does that work? I've got no experience with Pinterest whatsoever, and I think a lot of people don't, right? So how does that work?
Yeah, Pinterest is, I did a course on it back in 2018 about how it's an actual, it's a viable traffic source that you can actually, and the only downside of it is it actually works in certain specific niches, specific industries. It would work great in the travel industry, cosmetics, food, like do it yourself. The make money online niche, like the internet marketing niche, that one, I don't think it would work really well, but it does actually kind of bring a good number of traffic. So all these like obscure kind of niches, other than the travel and the food and whatnot, they, some of them would actually work in Pinterest. And it's the good thing about it is that it's almost as long-term and it's in the way it works as Google, because, you know, Google, you set up something, you work on something, and it just keeps bringing you traffic for months and years and stuff. For Pinterest, I mean, it requires a little bit more work. If you like create a pin, and you have a blog post and you create a specific number of pins for it and you keep pinning them every week, there are tools to automate it, but otherwise it would, you know, it would work just pretty much the same way. Instead of one pin bringing you traffic just for one day or 2 days, you could keep repinning that traffic every week or sometimes every month, and it could bring you traffic for a number of years. But that's still, it's still a good traffic source. There's a kind of a trend, kind of food blogs kind of space. So you'd find these people running these recipe websites and whatnot. So what they do is they come up with a really nice website. They design it, work on a good design and whatnot. They create content for SEO, and then they create content for Pinterest, and the SEO kind of side of it, articles that are made optimized specifically for SEO, they would take their time to rank 6 months, a year, sometimes even less, especially if it's a new kind of trend. Especially if you write about new trends, like back in the day it was the keto diet, like in 2016, 2017. So if you write about keto diet, it would only take you a few months to start ranking and getting traffic and kind of monetizing the site with ads. And you would do the same thing with Pinterest. You start creating these posts that are a little bit designed a little bit differently, and then you start pinning. And there's tools like Tailwind. Yeah, that's the most famous one. And they work in partnership with Pinterest, so that you wouldn't worry about your account being banned if in case you automate like pinning and stuff. So these guys are fine to use. And you'd see these traffic, these websites, you know, getting so much like 70% of the traffic from SEO and about 30% of traffic from Pinterest. And over the years, you know, because it's a long-term thing, it wouldn't take you long to get to, we're talking about 50,000 visitors a month, 100,000 visitors a month. It's really good numbers. And the amount of money that you can make, it's limitless, because the good thing about a blog is you can monetize it in different ways. Other than just running ads, you can run do affiliate marketing. You can sell ad space directly with other advertisers. You can act like an influencer. It can actually help promote your presence on social media, like Instagram. And so you can monetize directly the name of the blog or anything on Instagram. And, you know, there's just so many ways to monetize. So Pinterest actually does help bring a lot of traffic and a lot of eyeballs onto those articles. And the traffic is pretty much high quality, because it's mostly female and it's mostly English speaking countries. Then again, this is good for people in the US, North America, the UK, anywhere else that speak English. It's not so good for people in, you know, other different languages. But it's actually pretty good. It's still a pretty good, viable kind of traffic source that a lot of people are still kind of like relying on.
Are you talking entirely organic in that respect, or do you do any Pinterest paid advertising?
I'm only talking specifically organic traffic. I haven't even actually touched paid like Pinterest ads ever. The amounts of traffic that we were able to pull from Pinterest are astronomical over the years. And again, it's the because of the quality of traffic that it brings, the amount of money you can make is, again, in big numbers. Like we're talking about a simple blog and bring in $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month, and then with time, you can even sell it. The reason why we focus on SEO in addition to Pinterest, because if you want to resell that website of yours, the value kind of gets a little bit bigger. It's valuation, because mostly because of the organic traffic. Because if you tell somebody, oh, my website gets 80% of traffic from Pinterest and only 20% from SEO, what's going to happen is they might not know how to keep up the Pinterest traffic, because it might die off. Because again, at the end of the day, it's a social network. It's not like a search engine like Google. So that's why we try to up the numbers of this organic traffic from Google, because again, one of the things that a lot of people kind of like to do is to sell the websites ultimately. And then the more organic traffic you get, again, the more money you can get from selling the website.
That's awesome. That's really, really interesting, man. Like, really interesting. Obviously, I've heard of Pinterest ads. There's quite a lot of noise about them in the kind of the premier media buying groups right now. But yeah, the fact that you can get so much traffic with organic, and especially with super, super niche kind of things, is fascinating. I see just behind you there, you've got a copy of Atomic Habits on the shelf, which is a book I've just started reading. So yeah, I'm intrigued, man, to hear a bit more about like what your kind of habits are and how your day-to-day kind of looks.
I like that book because I found out, like when I bought it, I think a couple of years ago when it came out, found out that the guy who wrote it went to school with me in the US. Yeah, and we were there at the same time, finished school right around the same time. But I've never really like met him until, you know, I kind of stumbled upon the book. So,
oh, that's cool, man. So yeah, and then how does your kind of day-to-day look as an agency owner? Like, and what does your team look like? How are you kind of managing things?
Yeah, I mean, going from like being somebody who works a solopreneur, like working on by myself for years and years, it took me a while to actually get used to having people help me out in my team with stuff, you know, learning how to delegate and stuff. For me, I focus a lot on, you know, like comfort, not like sleeping in all day, waking up at 11 a.m. I don't want, you know, the idea of like not having a boss, not having somebody to nag you about doing this or that. You want to be in control of your life. You want to be in control of your daily life, specifically of having when I want to like go work out during the day, I kind of want to go work out during the day. So what I do is I kind of like try to design my lifestyle around me, around my family, having time for my family, for my kids, and also giving the people who work on my team, you know, not giving them a hard time about working with me, but I want them to be comfortable working with me and the agency, and everybody just being comfortable and not having stress and anxiety. And those are like the things that we try to avoid in the way we work. So we don't run a business where we ask people to work on Sundays or Saturdays or pick up the phone or like run into emergencies with our clients and stuff. So we designed everything to be kind of like a little bit more easygoing and not like cause as much stress. I mean, you have moments. You have those moments that happen, obviously. But then again, we try to kind of navigate those and try to design our lives in a way that makes people kind of just go and be just glad that they work in this field and in this space.
That's great, man. It's always great to hear about a company that's really focusing on culture. Well, hey, listen, man, like, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Like, you dropped some absolute like gold nuggets on us. So really appreciate that. Where can people find out a bit more about you, what you do, and connect with you?
Okay, so I'm almost everywhere. I'm on Twitter. I'm more active on Twitter. So you just look up my name, Hassan Anbar, on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm also on Instagram. So these three, I'm active on these three. If you have any questions about anything SEO, email marketing, I'm usually always available. I'm very generous with my time. So I usually just try to answer as many questions as I can.
That's awesome, man. Well, thanks again for taking the time and sharing some wisdom with us. And yeah, hopefully you speak soon.
All right. Thank you.
Cheers, man.
This has been the Viral by Design podcast with Dave Rothero. For more viral marketing secrets and to get detailed cliff notes on all episodes, visit viralbydesign.net.